Computer science and STEM education are hot topics in K-12. Parents, teachers, and school districts alike are scrambling to get students trained in the skills and attitudes they need to be relevant in today's economy. To find out about the state of K-12 STEM education in Leon County, we spoke with two local leaders to find out how they're accelerating change and bringing technology skills to a whole new generation. Miranda Manning is the recruitment coordinator for the FAMU FSU College of Engineering, and Megan Bunnell is the Tallahassee director of CodeCraft Works, a K-12 coding program. Together, these two are working hard to make sure that local students don't get left behind in the workforce revolution. To get the full scoop on K-12 STEM education in Tallahassee, tune in to Season 2, Episode 8 of the Startup Capital Podcast by Cuddlesoft. Production assistance for Startup Capital comes from WFSU Public Media.
You have a slight advantage when you're from Tallahassee.
I love Tallahassee.
We already have successes. We just have to continue to communicate the successes.
I love Tallahassee.
The old adage that the sum is greater than its parts, I think, could be more true for the city of Tallahassee.
I love Tallahassee.
I want it to be the change I wanted to see.
Obviously, we want to be the business capital of Florida.
I love Tallahassee.
I think millennials are really interested in business models that are both socially impactful as well as profitable.
I love Tallahassee.
I think, it takes government, private sector, nonprofit sector, students like yourself, the startup community, all kind of pulling the rope in the same direction to get there.
I love Tallahassee.
I love Tallahassee. It's the startup capital.
We are here for the 8th episode of the second season of Startup Capital, and today we're going to talk about STEM education in K-12 schools in Leon County and beyond. I have a pleasure of being joined today by Megan Bunnell of CodeCraft Works and Miranda Manning of the FAMU Florida State College of Engineering. Good morning, Miranda. How are you doing?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Very, very good. Megan, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you, Lucas?
I'm awesome. You guys ready to start off this conversation?
Yeah, we're ready. Yeah.
So if you could each provide a brief introduction about the work that you're doing in the community, especially as it relates to outreach and education, K-12, that would be great. I think really set the stage for everyone who's listening today to learn more about some of what's going on in Tallahassee and Leon County. Miranda, what are you up to at the College of Engineering, and what have you done recently in this space?
I'm Miranda Manning, and I am the recruitment coordinator at FAMU FSU College of Engineering. So I'm usually pounding the pavement looking for future engineers. Within this space of K-12 education, I've been doing a lot of work with really trying to understand how to make that more effective. So as a recruitment coordinator, I can receive a better student. And as an outreach coordinator, I can work to really improve what's going on within and without of the school system.
Are you seeing a lot of interest from high schoolers, junior high, as you're doing outreach to enroll in engineering?
Almost overwhelming.
That's great.
Engineering is definitely a buzzword right now, and so everyone wants to be an engineer. Although engineering is not for everyone, there's definitely a lot more interest, which I think is wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. And I think some of what we'll talk about is when you're receiving these students, do you feel that they've been prepped? Has the school system gotten them ready for what you guys need when they come in the door? And we'll get to that here in a little bit. But Megan, what are you up to in Tallahassee, Leon County? With CodeCraft Works.
Cool. Well, I am Megan Bunnell, and I am the Leon County Director of CodeCraft Works. I, too, pound the pavement, providing computer science and software engineering education for kids ages 8 through 18. It's doing a lot of outreach with the schools, with the communities, running after-school clubs, and seasonally, the summer camps.
Right, and it seems like you also have a good interface with the university system, too, working with
Absolutely. I have been really lucky to have great partnerships at FAMU and FSU at the College of Communication and Information at FSU. And at FAMU, I work with the Continuing Education Department and the Center for Public Computing and Workforce Development. And it's those partnerships that really make things happen with us at CodeCraft here in Tallahassee.
Right. And I think partnerships are probably going to be, again, what we talk about as a potential solution for solving some of these issues.
Absolutely.
But let's set the stage for where does STEM education stand today in our community, in our region, in our Leon County School District? Miranda, what are you seeing from the schools? Like, what are, do they have a sufficient amount of programs? Are they exploring and actively looking for new ideas and new programs? What's going on out there?
So the answer to your question is both a solid yes and a pretty solid no. So in the context of the actual curriculum that's being taught, there's not a lot of room to explore or explain the context of what you're learning. So I think for students, it really doesn't build a solid foundation. The reason behind that, I think, is you have administrations and a community of teachers that isn't really supported and given the resources they need. But what's amazing about that is it's led to some really cool innovations within that system. So you're seeing a lot more of engineering clubs, engineering tracks for students, robotics clubs, STEM clubs. And so you see teachers really thinking outside of the box to create ways to provide a context for the skills that students need to learn.
So it sounds like some of that is occurring outside of the rigidity of the curriculum itself, maybe in extracurricular programs, clubs, after-school programs.
Yeah, I would say the majority of it, but then I definitely get students that are in an official curriculum-based engineering track within high school, which was not around when I was a student.
Yeah, no,
so
me
that's
either.
It's super innovative, and it's really cool to see administrations and teachers being able to create on the books tracks that students can use.
Yeah. Megan, are you seeing exciting things like that in the schools that give you hope for the future?
Absolutely. What I would say the most positive thing is that there's a lot of excitement and curiosity in the school systems. I talk to a lot of educators, a lot of principals, and I hear STEM forward a lot. I hear we're thinking STEM forward, but the issue is, how do we do this? How do we implement the STEM curriculum that our kids want, that our parents want, that I think we clearly see is the future? Or now? It's now. It's not even the future anymore. So I think it's about, again, about the finding how you handle the lack of resources, how you handle these big institutions. I mean, we talk about how fast technology changes for us every day. It's changing. And to implement that into the schools in a way that is current and that works is a challenge. And I think one of the things that we're working on is providing an online platform that we can train teachers in, so educators can learn computer science and software engineering skills and then take those back into the classroom and teach those within their classroom. And I think that's how we start changing.
Right, so you're seeing that the training of the teachers themselves is one of the problems.
Absolutely. I mean, teachers are already doing too much, and they're doing a lot. And they, you know, it's a big, you know, it's like you start with kids, and then you have them educated in college, and then they're teachers. And teachers now, they didn't take computer science classes necessarily in college, but they're being said, told, all right, we want you to teach computer science. We want you to teach these kids how to code and coding languages. And I think giving the teachers an opportunity to get training, maybe continuing education credits even, so they're continuing their own professional development, and then they're able to take that back into the schools and teach the kids, which to us feels like a win-win for everybody.
Right. So you're talking about kind of a train-the-trainer
model. Absolutely. Yes.
Have you seen that deployed in some ways in the school systems?
Well,
are certain schools doing that?
Not yet. Not that I've seen. We're working on it, and we're working again with our great partners at FAMU to sort of start trying to institute some of that curriculum for teachers to start going out into schools.
Right. One thing that you hit on is the rapid change pace of technology. And I'm wondering, Miranda, if you feel like that's changed the way students learn or the way that they want to experience the classroom. And I think sometimes it's hard to get that kind of technology infrastructure into the class at the same pace that it's changing. But
absolutely. I think it's fundamentally changed how students experience the world and therefore how they learn. So if you think about it now, the beginning of a student's day, they have the ability to pick up their iPhone and look at global issues, look at social issues, look at, you know, personal interactions with people from hundreds of miles away to next door, and experience the context of so much more of the world around them than was ever possible. And so because of that, these students, they want that context first with almost everything. They want to know, why am I learning differential equations? And right now, the way the education system is set up is, hold on, we'll tell you down the road. You know, like, just keep learning, you'll understand later.
So just trust us.
Yes.
This is going to matter at some point.
Which might have been valid, you know, 10, 20 years ago. But it's no longer valid. And I think until we really start implementing, and you'll hear me say this 100 times today, context. Context along with the skill building and the learning is going to make students so much more successful. But that is how technology has fundamentally changed the way we interface with the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Megan, are you guys, what are you doing to try to integrate context into the curriculum? Or how do you get across the idea of, is it real problem-based learning? Like, what does the CodeCraft Works model look like in the classroom?
CodeCraft Works teaches concepts step by step. And I don't know if that's in juxtaposition with what you're saying or different. But one of the things that I think is important with code education is it's not easy. People think that they can sit a kid in front of a computer and a kid's on a computer all the time. Yes, they're checking their phone constantly. They're playing video games all the time. And it's like, oh, they're digital natives. They know what's going on. But it's one thing to play video games and to know how to be online. But it's another thing to create. And learning that takes, I think, a step-by-step curriculum that we design. We've aligned it with the Computer Science Teaching Association standards, and it all builds on each other. So you take the younger course, and you start learning your vocabulary and your fundamentals. You like that, then you can start taking the game design course. And then you can start taking Python coding language course. Then you can start taking cybersecurity.
Right.
So I think it's about providing the proper building blocks to success.
And it sounds like they're integrating that learning really quick in a way that gives them feedback. I mean, they're
absolutely
in a game design context, they're immediately applying it and learning in a way that's exciting, which maybe they're seeing the fruits of that labor real quick, which is maybe what Miranda is getting at.
Yeah, and actually, I kind of want to piggyback on what you said. Well, not piggyback, but kind of elaborate. When you think about like Raspberry Pis or Arduinos, those are actually a really fun and easy way to give coding a context. And it really is something as simple as giving students a week to just mess around with Arduinos and create wholeheartedly and freely without any restriction. Turn around next week and say, cool, you want to learn how to be more fluid in this environment and to push it to the next level. Will learn coding. And people are definitely doing that. I don't know if they're doing it intentionally, saying I'm giving you a context for what I'm about to teach you, but it is happening through cheap tech, which is great. So yeah, again, Arduino, stuff like that
Absolutely.
Is a really great way to give that context.
And I think the word of the day, anytime you talk about STEM, is agile and agility. And agility is constant in software development and in STEM, but in education of STEM, because we're dealing with institutions and schools, maybe not as agile as we'd like it to be. And so it's about giving those kids that technology, giving them that space to create, giving them some structure around that curiosity and seeing where that takes them.
Yeah, yeah. I think the real challenge is, you know, STEM is constantly evolving
constantly.
At light speed. And so to really understand that the way we teach STEM and tech has to be that agile and that have that ability to change at light speed is once we figure out how to do that effectively, the world would be our STEM oyster.
So do you think that's something, that kind of agility, can that be achieved in the classroom, or is it something that's gonna exist outside of it through camps and after-school programs, weekend things, summer programs?
It can absolutely be achieved in the classroom. We have a colleague that's doing it now. In order for that to happen, you're going to have to fundamentally change the way you teach teachers how to teach. And you have to remove a lot of the barriers and restrictions, whether it be resources, finances, or just
institution.
Support. Yeah, yeah. And support. And so once we remove those barriers and teach teachers to be as agile as the concepts they're teaching, that's going to change everything.
Yes, I absolutely believe it can be done in the schools, and we actively work to make that happen.
Right.
And then the after-school stuff, what I say a lot is it's all supplemental, and you're not competing, and you're not going to say, oh, I got enough coding. I mean, the kids eat this stuff up. They love it. Oh, I got enough in my hour-long computer science class in sixth period. No, after school, you know, there's no end to all the different pieces of STEM learning that you can do. And I think you can be in the classroom and outside of the classroom. And it's only going to, again, build on each other and make for some awesome kids that go into college and
absolutely
professional world.
And I think, so I also think that limiting STEM and tech, coding and all that to just the classroom doesn't really do us any good, because STEM, science, all that can be literally connected to everything in your daily life, as well as coding and tech. And so I think moving away from just that traditional, I'm going to learn this from 8 to 2 in the, you know, 2 in the afternoon, and understanding that there are learning opportunities throughout the day is probably going to benefit us in the way we structure real effective education.
So we could create platforms that are more flipped, where maybe they're at home, they're accessing an online platform, learning, playing a game, creating something.
Yeah,
go back and discuss it in the classroom.
Yes,
absolutely. Yeah.
I have a question. I just want to pull back a bit about accessibility and availability of these types of programs. Obviously, there are some schools that do pilot programs and some that take the lead. But in the last few days in our community, there's been some reports and news about just how segregated in some ways the school system is in terms of along racial and ethnic lines, around class lines, and that not all schools have the same opportunities in our community. So is that something that you're seeing? Do you feel like technology and STEM education is evenly distributed? Or, you know, I've heard a quote about the future's here, it's just not an evenly distributed future. Does that exist even between neighborhoods in our community?
Yes. Unfortunately, it does. And this, I'm an optimist and I'm positive and I believe it doesn't have to exist. And that's as much as I believe that technology will be in the classrooms and we'll all be learning. I think that means all, that we will all be learning. And I think it's about being conscious of those barriers and breaking them down and providing access for all.
What kind of barriers have you seen in your work? Is it just people go home and they don't have internet?
Computers. Or, yeah. Computers. I think there's an assumption that everybody goes home and has a computer or has the internet and can continue coding and playing around. But that is not the case. There's also schools, the funding is unequal. Some schools obviously have more money than other schools, and that's just the way it is. There's also scholarships and sponsorships and a lot of opportunities, partnerships to level that playing ground. You know, we have CodeCraft Foundation that supports scholarships for students, always fundraising, always looking for opportunities. We had the amazing Florida Blue sponsorship this last year that allowed us to put 60 kids through summer camps. And we also ran an entire school year after school club at the Palmer Monroe Teen Center. Partners like that, people who are helping, I think help even the playing field.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Miranda, what kind of outreach from the College of Engineering's perspective, what kind of outreach into the community are you guys doing? Is it mostly recruitment related of STEM students? Are there also training and education programs going on?
So it's a little bit of both. There's obviously a lot of recruitment. We do also have some really great programs. So we have one professor who's working on a summer program for high school students. And in that, she walks them down not only an engineering path, but one with an entrepreneurial spin on it. And so it allows them to live the whole life cycle of that journey and understand what that looks like every summer. So I think that space to give context while still skill building is really great. We also have programs from senior year of high school and that summer into freshman year of college. Those are really great transitional programs. They're called Summer Bridge programs. But if it's okay, I'd like to also piggyback on what she talked about, resources.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to say, we need to circle back because Miranda has like a lot of good things to say about
this is my space where I just have spent a lot of time in this, and it drives me crazy. The resource inequality is staggering. Staggering. Within Tallahassee alone, you can go to one school and these students are drowning in resources, and you can drive four miles.
iPads on every wall.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone's backpack. They got the iPhone, the iPad.
The big smart screen, chalkboard to teach on. I mean,
and then you can go 4 miles down the road and walk into a school that looks kind of deserted as far as resources go.
With real chalkboards.
Real chalkboard.
Yeah. And so the thing is, Like, STEM and coding is not going to be effectively taught with pencils and papers, but we're asking entire schools to do that. And if you're not going to give every student an even playing field with even resources and an even education, you're never going to get a quality education across the board. And until we really start to own and address the resource inequality in schools, we're always going to be playing a wicked game of catch up.
Right.
Yes.
Now, I'm glad that you guys are passionate about this topic. I mean, you demonstrate that through your work and the things you're doing every day. I'd really love to hear some examples of kids that you're seeing taking technology, using it in unexpected ways. What have you seen in your programs day to day, and what have you seen kids create that's really inspired you?
What's the word? I surveyed my colleagues to get some cool projects that were done, which isn't maybe as kind of heartfelt. But I learned about things like LED masks, like masquerade masks, using Spheros, again, another cool, cheap technology where you build bridges and program your Spheros to go over it. So that's getting very STEM heavy. But I think what happens is you give students the beginnings of this technology and you see them start to think and start to think about what they can build. And they build a lot of games. I'm from a literature background, so I love seeing digital stories. One girl did a whole digital story on Scratch about saving manatees and about manatee awareness. And so that's taking your social good and putting it on a technology platform.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And I think that tying all that in through technology is a beautiful thing.
Agreed, agreed. I think a good example I saw was actually at Challenger Learning Center, and I was doing a summer camp, and we had a bunch, I think it was like fourth and fifth graders, and we were doing a day about civil engineering. And so we start out with basic questions, you know, what does a city need? What does that look like? But by the end of the day, I kid you not, these kids had built a giant three-dimensional structure that was probably 6 feet by 6 feet with power grid systems and water retention areas and collections and purifications and libraries that are full of 3D printers. And they literally built this out of just random recyclables. And so to watch this whole little like kid collective work together to genuinely cover every resource, everything you would need in a city in a matter of one camp period, like one camp day, was mind-blowing.
Absolutely. And I was going to bring up a group I work with, Livingstones International. They're a nonprofit organization that they work with the kids of incarcerated parents. And so they were able, through a Google grant, I believe, to get Chromebooks, which are little small agile laptops for their kids. And then through some fundraising, STEAM Hack, that's going to happen in, I think, February this year, the proceeds go to getting the computer science and software engineering education for those kids. And they're ones that I think are being introduced to how to handle a Chromebook and how to be online. And then we'll start teaching them the fundamentals of what an algorithm is and what an if-then statement. And then I think it'll be really exciting to see where that access and that organization takes them.
So STEAM Hack is a weekend hackathon type of event?
Weekend hackathon involving, I believe, college students. And the idea is an sort of educational social good hack. It's about how you can make a product that will work in education, I think.
Right. So those types of events, I think, bring a lot of visibility in the community. I heard a rumor that you guys were going to collaborate on something over the next month or so. So what's
Miranda?
Going on there, Miranda?
Yeah. All right. So as you know, Tallahassee Startup Week is coming. And so Megan, myself, Vincent Hunt, and
Christy Strickland
from JA.
And Gina.
And Gina from FAMU. She's a professor over at FAMU. We have all formed a board, and we are going to be holding an event at the Challenger Learning Center in which we will take families and talk about the actual path to being an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurialism is really big, and a lot of it kind of ends at the pitch, right? So we get these kids fired up, and we're like, all right, what's your pitch? And then we're like, cool. that's it.
But what comes next?
So what comes next?
What comes after the Shark Tank?
Yes. Right. Yes. And so we'll be splitting parents and students. And with the parents, we'll be talking about their very real fears. You know, it's parents are worried their student or their kid is going to go out, be an entrepreneur, fall flat on their face, and that this parent's going to have to support this broken child for the rest of their lives.
But falling flat on your face is kind of what being an entrepreneur is. So
only 100 times, right?
Right. Yeah.
And so we want to really help parents understand that, you know, college is a really great route for a lot of people, but it's not the only route. And I think now parents think college first, then we'll figure it out. But entrepreneurialism is a legitimate route. It's going to take the same amount of grit that being, you know, a college student would take. And so really exploring that with families, and then with the students themselves, talking about what their actual next steps are and building kind of an action plan for what this looks like.
Giving them that toolkit to take their idea from the pitch to the, face falling to a viable product.
Yeah.
I mean, what's funny is that kind of falling flat on your face, there's not one right answer. That's directly analogous to STEM and computer coding and
life,
hugely. Yes.
Life in general. Yep. So, I mean, we're talking about big life lessons.
Yeah. We're talking about the need for grit. And this is it. So context is my jam, but also so is grit. So we're looking at a generation of students that was A, raised with standardized testing and helicopter parents. Not all parents are helicopter parents, but there's a substantial majority. And what I'm seeing with students is we've created very fragile students that have a very unhealthy relationship with failure. So previous generations of STEM professionals or STEM academics and entrepreneurs knew you needed grit, and you're going to fail 1,700 times in that lab before you get that patent. As an entrepreneur, you're going to fail hundreds of times before you make any traction. These kids genuinely don't understand that. They are in so much fear of failing a test, six times a year, and having parents that are not teaching them to transmute failure into a learning lesson. It's, oh, you failed. You are now a failure. And so I think in order for things to be successful and students to really take hold in the STEM and entrepreneurial areas and coding and all that, we need to work on increasing the amount of grit.
Well, that's a good reminder, too, for the teachers that they can use those types of lessons in the classroom and that's something that they can demonstrate.
Your code will not work. At some point, your code will break, your website will break, your Arduino project will break. And I think a lot of these STEM projects do take away some of the preciousness of failure. You have to break something to know how it works and to build it. And that's okay. It's hard. It might be really frustrating. It's one little tiny piece of code. Then you fix it and then it works. And it's so brilliant. And then that success of getting it to work after you think it's failed is phenomenal. Sweet. Yeah, they love it. It's very rewarding.
Yeah, it's a sweet victory.
It is.
Absolutely.
Sweeter.
So, but that feels a little bit like where we're at with STEM education. Maybe we'd had to break in order for us to figure out the way forward, right?
Well, I like that. Yeah, absolutely.
So what are you guys most excited about over the next year or 2 years in this community? What are you looking forward to, whether it's your own work, the work of others? Where can we make the most impact, you think, over the next few years here in Tallahassee, Leon County?
Honestly, first, I'm excited that we're even having this conversation. The fact that this conversation is happening in a public forum is a huge signal that we're ready for that shift. At FAMU, FSU College of Engineering, we've got some really, really great people, and they're doing some really great initiatives. And so with FAMU specifically, they've got really really innovative with their foundations for helping students transition successfully into college to become future engineers. So FAMU is doing some really great stuff. They have some great high school programs and outreach programs. Within the College of Engineering itself, we've got Dr. Bernadine, who's working on her summer program that really is about giving that context for students and allowing them access to some pretty substantially cool equipment. And that alone, I think, is awesome. But I think that what I look forward to the most is people really just breaking the mold of what traditional STEM education is and exploring and learning. And in many ways, role modeling that comfortability with failure. And so if we can iterate 100 times and over again and really fine-tune what that education looks like in Tallahassee, I think we really have some serious potential as a community.
I think what I'm most excited about is watching you two work. Watching you two change this space and change STEM education. Obviously, you're doing it alongside a lot of other people, but you're both working on really exciting things, whether it's CodeCraft Works, FAMU FSU College of Engineering, and all of those programs. So thank you for being engaged in that, and thank you for being leaders in this space. The community needs more leaders like that.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it.
I am too.
Yeah.
This has been a recording brought to you by Cuddlesoft, the idea-driven developers. For more on Tallahassee's startup community, the business of technology, and the latest in software development, visit www.cuddlesoft.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in next time for the next edition of the Startup Capital Podcast.